This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Late last month, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released its most damning report. It says there's more than 95% chance that human beings are responsible for climate change. It says ice loss from glaciers continues, sea level will rise, and even if we stop carbon dioxide emissions now, many global warming impacts will continue for at least hundreds of years. Well, none of this comes as any surprise to Miles Silman or to the group he helped found, the Andes Biodiversity and Ecosystem Research Group. Silman is a biologist at Wake Forest University, and he traveled to Peru in August for the 10th annual conference of that group that he helped found. And there they talked about the impact of global warming and other topics, and he joins us now. Miles, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Also with us, Justin Catanoso. Justin is a program director for journalism at Wake Forest University, and he traveled to Peru with Silman, and he has been reporting about what he found. Justin, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Frank, it's good to see you again.
So, Justin, well, set up this story for us. Tell us a little bit about the group and why you went down to Peru.
Well, I went down to Peru. I met Miles earlier this year. We are colleagues at Wake Forest, but you know how academics are. We exist in different silos. And we had an opportunity to meet back in February. And the more I learned about his research and the more I learned about this issue of climate change in the tropics and how underreported the topic is. So as you suggested in your intro, we know a lot about what's happening at the poles. Very little do we know about what's happening in the tropics. And this was especially of Miles and this Andes group. He invited me to come down, and I took it as an opportunity to do stories that I had never done before, to really challenge myself as a journalist and learn something new and see if I can't contribute to the knowledge of what's happening regarding climate change in a different part of the world.
So, Miles, tell us more about this, about the part of the world we're not thinking about. We say global warming, we always think of, you know, penguins scrambling for the last piece of ice, but you're looking at a whole different region, right?
Yeah, the area that we work in is in the western Amazon and Andes, so it's the area on Earth that has the highest biological diversity. Maybe 25% of the species on the planet are found in that area. And the area that we work in specifically is part of the Andes that ranges from tree line, so about 11,000 to 13,000 feet, where the trees can't grow anymore. It moves into grassland all the way down into the Amazon basin in one continuous transect. And so we can use that as a natural laboratory to understand the effects of climate change, even just basic things about how species distribute themselves on the planet.
So what's happening?
Well, one of the things that we've found is that species are moving. So one is that climate is changing in our area, and that species are moving in response to climate. One of the big findings that we've had is that species, tree species, are actually moving up in response to ongoing climate change. They're moving up at a rate of a couple meters a year in altitude up the side of the Andes.
All right. So, and this not necessarily by itself a bad thing. They're doing what it takes to survive. What are the implications of this kind of movement?
Yeah, it's interesting. So trees have been moving around in response to climate as long as there have been trees, right? Every species moves around in response to climate change. And so what made this interesting is that we have paleoecological data. So we can go back and look in the lakes in the region. We can go and take mud out of the bottom of the lakes and look at how the mud is, date the mud, and then see how it's stacked up like a layer cake. And in those layers are pollen that tell you about the trees that used to be there. And when we look in the past, we could see the trees migrating in response to climate changes that we knew happened. And they would migrate at a rate that was about maybe a degree, between 1 and 3 degrees centigrade every 1,000 years. And then when we started to look at the projections for climate in this region, we saw that it was going to be 3-4 degrees C in less than 100 years. And so that really got us focused on the question of, can these trees move fast enough in response to climate change?
Yeah, so that's one implication, right? They might not make it.
They might not make it, yeah.
What about the other? I mean, and the other thing I would guess is that not all species move at the same rate. And so since these are ecosystems, it's not just the tree making it up, but everything that depends on the tree and everything the tree depends on. So I guess it's a very complicated picture, and they have to kind of move together.
They do, and even within the trees, leaving aside the other things that depend on them, first, the trees are moving at vastly different rates. So some of the trees are not moving at all. And a few tree species are moving very rapidly. And so what that says is these communities are going to be different when we look in the future. And we're not talking long time spans into the future. We're talking into the time spans of, it's ongoing now, but our kids and our grandkids will see very different communities. And then, of course, all of these trees, or down in the lowlands of the Amazon, 90% of the species rely on animals to pollinate them, to disperse their seeds. And so you'll have these effects on other aspects of the ecosystem as well.
The implications, I think, are pretty clear for all of us, what this means if you look at one region and see how quickly these changes occur and how the implications of change, those species that might not make it. What about the people in Peru? I mean, are they particularly interested in your research and what's happening?
They are, and I think just as much as we here don't think about climate outpacing trees and leaving them behind and causing this large amount of extinction, in Peru they don't know that as either, and they're trying to manage these forests. These forests provide lots of services for them. They're important for their water cycle. They store carbon, which could be very valuable on an ecosystem services market. So they need to manage this. And yeah, when they see these results, they're surprised. And we've had meetings with the Ministry of the Environment, people in charge of regulating forestry plans, and this work is moving into policy.
You talk about ecosystems management and sort of the sale of carbon offsets. I mean, this is, Justin, something that you've covered and I think looked into. What are the implications then because we've heard, for instance, in Ecuador, they went and tried to put their offsets on the market, couldn't do it. So they said, okay, kind of come on in China and develop the oil. What can we do?
Yeah, it's a complicated system. It's a complicated market that is just getting a lot of attention. And a lot of the things that I tried to understand there is what can we do about this? Is there anything we can do to slow this thing down? And what kept coming up on an international basis was this idea of carbon offsets. It's controversial at certain levels when it's done on small scale, but we really need, if you talk to these scientists that study it, larger scale apparatus to go forward. So what we're talking about is in a place like Manu National Park, which is the size of Massachusetts, you need several of those. You need lots of those across the Amazon basin. You need them protected. And the reason you need them protected, as Miles was suggesting, was for the services they provide. But how do you do that? These are poor countries, okay? So Peru is a third world country in many ways, and they've got gold and oil under those forests. So what you have right now, groups from Stanford University, from NASA, are doing these aerial surveys and these flyovers to try to estimate how much carbon is being stored in these tropical forests. And then they're trying to put a price tag on that. And they're saying, okay, can we compete? Can we give you enough money to not cut these trees down that is commensurate with the natural resources that are underground? Well, who's going to pay for that? Well, the people that are doing the polluting. So 40-some percent of all global emissions are coming from two countries, the United States and China. Well, will China actually reimburse Peru for the carbon that's being stored from all the pollution that they make in Beijing, for example? Because this is kind of how it works. I mean, it's one of the things that I got to see and appreciate by being with these tropical biologists was just how interrelated the global ecosystem is. This is something the UN has been pursuing for about 4 years. As you suggested, Ecuador put a price tag on 4,000 square miles of its rainforest for these services, and they didn't raise a lot of money. Less than $10 million, as a matter of fact. And so they're saying that they're going to go for the oil because China wants this oil. It's really complex. The reasons why they didn't raise the money, this is sort of an unstable government that defaulted on a lot of its loans a few years ago. So you didn't have people lining up to give them money. But we got to kind of think about how to address these things. And carbon offsets presents one of these opportunities if we can figure out the details.
What a crazy race this is, Miles, because you talked about trees evolving at various rates and their ecosystems. Will they make it up the mountain? We're doing the same thing here politically. We've got whole quarters of our sort of political environment and on the political stage. We don't even think the global warming exists. They've denied it, though. So you've got them kind of evolved at their stage. And then the other foot race, which is, okay, even if everybody believed it and we acted today, I mean, the suggestion is it may not help.
I don't think that's true, right? There's a whole kind of set of scenarios of warming, and you always need to act. And if we were to do something as simple as put a price on carbon so that the effects of what we do in the environment are actually rolled into the prices of the way we generate energy, then the rate of carbon going into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere would drop, and we would have much lower warming than what's predicted. The warming that we're looking at for just kind of the average warming, right, is now between 3 and 4 degrees C by 2100, so by the end of this century. So we're looking at 6, 7, 8 degrees Fahrenheit. It would make the climate of this part of North Carolina like the climate of northern Florida or even central Florida. So we're talking about moving the world into just a completely different state. So the little things that we can do, and really the big things we can do that don't seem to be that hard, will have a big effect on the world that we live in. We're on trajectory to live in a different world by the end of the century.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Miles Silman is a biologist at Wake Forest University. Justin Catanoso, Program Director of Journalism at Wake Forest. For more information on this subject and all of the reporting, you can go see the piece that Justin did on this convention and on its report at our website, stateofthings.org. There's more just ahead. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.